But we didn't, we couldn't come up with anything without the word women in it, because we're having seven teachers who are women, and felt it was time for them to be heard. I want to say that Ruth Dennison, one of the teachers who was to come, had to cancel at the last minute because her husband is ill, so she will not be with us this weekend. And Tony Packer is here just for today, and I want you to know that, so that if you want to have some kind of contact with her, know that she'll only be available till 4. The other five teachers will be here throughout the weekend. I can't tell you how exciting it was for us to have so many people register for this conference. And if you registered early, you saw the evolution of the of the literature that went out, first advertising dormitory-style accommodations, then a little letter saying, we have a lot of registrations and you may have to sleep on the floor, then a long letter saying, we're hiring tents and a port-a-john, and please come anyway, and if you're not comfortable with that, stay in a motel. So it was very exciting for all of us to have so many of you want to join us this weekend. Needless to say, the rain is putting a damper on sleeping in a tent, and we have some other plans, one of which is that you could sleep up at the temple, which would be a good way to get to know the temple intimately, the temple that we're building, which does have a roof and is drier than a tent. I wanted to say a couple of words about the program, in that then you'll know basically what you're getting into. First of all, feel free to come to whatever you want to come to. You don't have to come to anything you don't want to come to. We're inviting everybody to come to our usual Providence Zen Center formal meditation practice tomorrow morning. But if you don't want to come to that, be sure that you don't sleep in this room or the room underneath, because if you do, you will come anyway. Sleep somewhere else in the what we're calling the Kielce area. We call it Kielce area because we have a 90-day retreat in the wintertime and a shorter silent retreat there in the summertime. And that we also call the area outside those rooms the blue rug area. And that area is far enough away so that if you need to sleep or whatever you choose to do, that will be enough away so that you may just hear the wake-up bell, but you won't be hearing all the chanting and so forth. We will be following the time periods as exactly as possible. In writing a program, one of the things I think is important is to follow it so that you have a chance to hear all the people on the program. And one of the things that often happens with a program like this is that the formal practice periods get sort of insidiously shorter and shorter. And I'm going to try to make sure that that's not done. One of the joys of having so many teachers here, although most of them are what we've been calling Zen, I'm sure some of them will clarify whether or not they're Zen teachers or what that means. But everyone's from a slightly different style, so each teacher will be leading the sitting period before her talk, which may mean not doing anything at all except asking to be quiet or maybe talking through it or hitting the jukpi or the bell. And then there'll be two different kinds of chanting after lunch, which we'll announce when you get into the room. So I'm encouraging you to be on time. That's something that has been very hard training for me. It took me 11 years of living in a monastery to learn to be on time some of the time. We're going to encourage people to do that this weekend. There are several different ways we felt was important to communicate together. One is the large lectures. One is the workshops. There'll be three running concurrently, and you'll be choosing one of them, but you will have heard all three of the teachers earlier in the day, so you'll know whose workshop you're going to. Another way of communicating is in small groups. We felt that it was very important to give you some time to meet with people in groups of 8 or 10 or 12, I'm not sure how it will work out, to be able to process some stuff, whatever is going on with you and your practice, and get to know some people a little more intimately than in a workshop of 30 or 35 people. We also think that formal practice together is a wonderful way of communicating together and working together. So we have incorporated a work period tomorrow morning into the program. And we're doing, obviously there's always work to be done, but we're doing that not so much because of the work to be done, but that we think that's a really important way of communicating and practicing together. And at this particular Zen Center, there's always been great emphasis on working. And if you see pictures of Bobby, our teacher, our woman teacher, Master Dharma teacher Barbara Rhodes, who we call Bobby, she's almost always in the kitchen, in the garden, with the bees. It's very hard to get a formal picture of her. And also, of course, we'll have informal times of meals. And I almost went swimming on the program, but with the Hurricane Diana's tail, I left it off. But there will be some breaks when you can use the sauna and hot tub or sit around in the lounge. We hope that you see this weekend as cozy and friendly rather than overcrowded, because that's our intention. In fact, I'll tell you a story about when we went to Korea. Sansunim, our teacher, takes about 20 people to Korea every couple of years, and we do a great sightseeing trip. And often there are a lot of Korean women, bosalmims, traveling with us. And it was so incredible to see that if there was not enough space, or there were not enough, futons, they're big comforters, and you sleep on one and have one over you, and you're just the height of luxury on the rice paper floors. If there weren't enough, they would give two to each American woman, and about five Korean women would all curl up like mice and sleep together. And it was just the most wonderful. And the American women are, sort of sleeping like this so we won't touch each other. And they're all like these little nests of mice laughing and giggling and talking together. And so I hope that you see the numbers of people in that light. All right. Without further ado, I want to introduce to you Tony Packer, who comes to us from the Genesee Valley Zen Center in New York. She studied for a long time with Kaplo Roshi and also has been influenced by Krishnamurti and has developed her own style of teaching. And we'll share that with us in a number of ways, beginning with a 15-minute sitting period. Tony? Do you want to, should we shut the door so people don't come in during sitting? Do you care?
No.
Good.
Some of you are sitting on chairs, some of you are sitting on the mat. Without saying too many words, just sit for 15 minutes. Is it 15 minutes?
10.
10? 15? I'll ring,
yes,
or strike some instrument when the period is over. And how to sit is up to each one. Is it possible to sit as motionlessly quiet as possible? Not even moving the eyeballs around.
I would like to make one correction about the introduction. It was mentioned that I was influenced by Krishnamurti. It is not a matter of influence at all. But simply a matter of seeing clearly, seeing clearly for oneself what is pointed out clearly, which is freedom from influence. When Susie wrote and asked for a title to the talk, and I was so busy as usually at the office, seeing the title of the conference, the title Images for This Talk came in, so this is what we wrote her, and now I'm stuck with it. And the title is Images. If I remember it correctly, it is Women and American Buddhism. The fact that one is a woman is a fact. Maybe I should wait for a while. Can one listen to all these sounds without thinking that they are a distraction? We were talking about the title for this conference, Women and American or in American Buddhism. It is a fact that one is a woman or a man. But one also has an image of oneself as a woman or a man. Not just one image, a whole host of images. That one is a Buddhist or belongs to Buddhism is an image. And America, that one is an American, is an image, apart from the fact that one carries some papers when one goes abroad. To think of oneself as an American, if one looks carefully, is tied up with images. And emotions, as are all images. Just before leaving, waiting for somebody to get the car to go to the airport, a woman who was working in the kitchen, she had dropped in recently, had been very active in women's movement. She said, "What are you going to say to these people when you go? Are you just going to be your usual talks about this or that? Are you going to be concerned with women, how they have been downtrodden in spiritual traditions, at the bottom of the hierarchical structure, men considering that they're incapable of liberation, emancipation, enlightenment, which holds for the Zen tradition," she said, as well as other Buddhist traditions. "Are you going to address yourself to this? There are women who are waiting to hear about it. And what are you going to do about it?" See, this work, as I see it, even though each individual case, each individual human being is embraced in it, is more than specific issues or specific problems, real though they may seem to be. This work, as I see it, is not doing what we normally do and have been doing for hundreds and thousands of years, namely rushing to solve problems in a more or less violent way. To understand the problem, not just superficially, not just deeply, but totally. So completely that in this understanding, a problem may be resolved. Not through a solution, but through understanding. Before continuing with this, let me say something about listening. Because here we are from many different backgrounds, places, countries, traditions, or no traditions. How does one listen to a talk like this or the following ones? Can you listen carefully as though it was just a conversation between you and me? How are you listening? Do you have an image of Tony? To my surprise, meeting people, a lot of people say, I know about you, I've heard about you. So, do you have an image? Knowing about Tony, having an idea about her. Maybe you've read a little booklet, heard stories, and now you have an idea of what she is or propagates. And do you have an image of yourself? What group or tradition you belong to? And is there the ever readiness in the mind to compare what is being said to what one already knows? Then you're not listening, you're comparing. And what is said sort of flows by, unheard. So for the short duration of a talk like this, is it possible to suspend what one knows, to suspend comparison? And just be open, completely open, not knowing how one will react, just receiving. One has an image of oneself or of this person that is sitting here, this pure listening is impeded or distorted. One reads into it or subtracts from it, or some things one will not want to listen to at all. Maybe too painful or too threatening. Do you see that you do have an image of yourself as being somebody or many bodies? Being a Buddhist, a woman, an American. The American image was recently very much appealed to by watching the Olympic Games. If one watches something like this, does one watch deeper than what is just seen on the screen, when the national anthem is played, when the flags go up and our boys stand up on top? Does the patriotic heart starts beating? One feels so good, it's a boost to the, what to what? It's a boost to the image. Having lots of medals, one doesn't mind seeing somebody else win every once in a while. Because one also identifies with the image of brotherhood. As far as one's religious affiliation is concerned, is one identified with it? Attached to it? So that one's self-image includes the religion, the religious group or center that one belongs to, is invested in it, which is easily tested when someone knocks it, criticizes it. Does one feel defensive immediately? Personally attacked, personally hurt? Or if somebody praises one's group or center, one's vanity is flattered. One's personal vanity. One is identified. This is me. And as a woman, what kind of multiple images does one nurture? Mostly unawares, or maybe more and more this is coming into awareness if one works with this. Many people say to me, women have such a bad image of themselves, one has to work on one's image, which means substitute a good image for a bad image. But why does one need any image? Because one doesn't understand the difficulty, the obstacle, the impediment that an image constitutes anywhere for anyone, whether it is on the small level of oneself. One may well have witnessed the battle of inner images. One wants to be a good mother, but one also wants to go to retreat. There's the guilt feelings as the mother, and guilt feelings if one doesn't go enough to retreat. So there's a battle of images within, which expresses itself in irritation in relationship without, too. And then there is interpersonal relationship, which is strained often to the limit and beyond limits by two people living together having images that are at war with each other or in contradiction with each other. Who dominates whom? Feeling manipulated and needing to manipulate because one has been manipulated, all out of watch it for yourself. You will discover amazing things, what goes on in this mind and therefore throughout this body. Because anything that goes on in this mind, one single thought, is totally connected with the whole organism, electrically, neurochemically. One pleasurable thought gives a gush of good feeling. And then one wants to keep that. That's another thought. How can I keep that? And then when it stops, what have I done to lose it? How can I get it back? And the body, poor body, has to respond to all of this. It's not even done yet with the pleasure, and so, then it's already pain. Because body isn't done so quickly. It takes the physical organism a while to get back into balance. I don't know whether our bodies even know what balance is anymore. There's so much residue still there, unfinished residue, not just within the body, but of course within the brain. All this mental bookkeeping that we do, remembering what he or she did to us this morning, yesterday, a year ago, sometimes 10 or 15 years ago. I'm not going to forget that, one says, because one has once heard one's parents say that. Which means no relationship with this person possible. The person is branded, marked. One sees him or her, and there is the image of what he or she did. The response is dictated by the image, dominated by it. Unless there's an insight into it, one sees it, And the seeing is already an interruption of it. Image making may continue because it's very pleasurable to us. We live in and for our images, even if they're painful, because we have to live for something. And if one begins to question in this work, which myself I don't call Zen work anymore because it is an unnecessary extra word to ask, to answer, I mean to add to this inquiry, it does not need any description. It's a fundamental inquiry into the human mind and body. Not my mind and body personally, but the human mind. Because to the extent that this mind, as it functions in images, in blockages, in contradiction and conflict, to the extent that this is clearly understood and seen, the human mind is clearly understood and seen, because it does not differ from one person to another fundamentally. On the surface, superficially, we are all different, but fundamentally, we all have an image about ourselves, of being a self, of being someone. And to see that this is an idea, a thought creation, seems inordinately difficult. It feels so solid, so real, and one confuses it with this body and with the ongoing thought process, or processes and emotion processes, but they don't belong to anybody. To say this is me and have an image of it, I'm good at it, I'm poor at it, I'm this or that, is a mental construction, is a mental thought, a bunch of thoughts and ideas, just as any other thought and idea. It's part of that stream of thinking poured out by the brain. And yet it is the root of all our individual, interpersonal problems and international problems. If one is very concerned, as probably most of you here are, with the state of the world, fighting that goes on in the Middle East. Recently I heard a famous news commentator say, he was just reporting about a new incident in Jerusalem where Christians, Muslims, and Jews were at loggerheads, at bloody loggerheads with each other. He said, how is it possible that in a place where three of the greatest religions were born and all of them preaching peace, people kill each other? He says it's unfathomable. But if one understands identification, investment, image, defensiveness, and aggressiveness, which comes out of hurt within oneself, then it is not unfathomable that members of religious groups fight each other, even kill each other. So what is one going to do about all of this? Which was the question asked of me, of this woman in the kitchen. What are you going to do about it? It is a simple fact that this work can only start with oneself. because if oneself confusion reigns, images dominate and motivate one's action, one's position, one's goals, what one wants to become or be, when that dominates the scene, how can one resolve confusion among each other and in the world? One just carries that confusion with one. And yet will one start to look, to question everything, leave no stone unturned, may shake up our whole foundation. But one may keep it, one may say, all right, I'm attached to it, I want to keep it. But is one at least clear what one is doing? That one's foundation may be a foundation of separation and isolation, because it divides from other foundations of other human beings, each one defending their own. Believing in their own, putting their refuge in their own. Reaching, as it were, over the foundation walls to shake hands with someone else who reaches over his foundation wall or hers, and to shake hands and assure each other of mutual understanding. Or can walls break down completely? It's a tremendous challenge. One may feel Tony's exaggerating, or it's her opinion. I'm not trying to give opinions, I'm talking about what comes out of looking very seriously into oneself. And seeing the danger of identification with something or somebody and being somebody. It's only when you really work on yourself, as many of you do, probing deeply and stopping nowhere, not going this far and any farther I will not go, but going all the way, that one really comes in touch with a fundamental anxiety of being nobody. And then there's usually a withdrawal from that. Or is there? Will one face that anxiety, not as a facer, but just be that? And not stop questioning or looking, feeling, hearing, listening, with no goal in mind, just because it's there. Because one is in touch with it and one has come upon it. And if maybe there is a glimpse of insight into the fact that we in fact are nobody, no thing, and with this a joy that cannot possibly be put into words, because it has nothing to do with words. Then the next moment, does one try to grab onto it, make it into an image? I am somebody who has seen, and decorate oneself accordingly, mentally or directly. Comes so quickly, it comes like mushrooms spring out of the ground on a moist, rainy day. There they are, new images. Will one see them immediately and drop them? Or is one, well, I've done this thing now, I've gotten through it once and this is it. I know I'm one. What does it mean, I know I'm one? It's already in a memory. can there be this thing now, being no one and therefore open and related to everyone and everything, with a lovingness that cannot be produced through any kind of practice, no matter who the teacher is who prescribes the practice. Love is not practicable. It's either there or it isn't there. And it is not there when the me is there who wants it, tries to grab it, hold on to it, or bring it about. One may deceive oneself of being this kind of a person or that, being very compassionate. It's an image. Do you see it when it comes up? And can it be dropped so one rather not knows who one is and let action flow out of this not knowing and therefore in touch, listening, seeing, looking? It's up to each one of us. No one can do it for us. Listen.